Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Julianne Curry is going to join me in a bit. She's with the United Fishermen of Alaska. We're going to talk to her from Petersburg, and she's going to continue our Fish 101 here on Juneau Afternoon. The Juneau Pride Chorus will be dropping in today. They're doing a Music on the Fly concert out at the airport on probably tonight. Claire Richardson will be here. Star Hill Summer Potluck is this weekend. Gold Rush Days is on. Jerry Harmon will come in to tell us about that, and we'll have some folks over here from Food Truck Friday, which is going on this afternoon at the Jack, as it does every Friday afternoon through the summer. So all of that's going to be happening here on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned. Now it's time for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus. The Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and its member tribes, Warm Springs, Yakima, Umatilla, and Nez Perce, have completed the first update to their comprehensive fisheries restoration plan. KWSO's Will Robbins reports the update addresses a host of issues and opportunities that have arisen since the original plan was written almost 20 years ago.
The plan is called Waikanish Mi Wakishwit, meaning Spirit of the Salmon. The update describes the progress and needed modifications to the institutional and technical recommendations in the original plan. It also identifies and addresses several new challenges and recommendations 18 years into the 25-year plan. Sarah Thompson is a public information officer for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. She talks about some of the challenges of that plan.
Today we're dealing with things like climate change and unmanaged predation, water quality. Those are just a few of the issues that weren't originally in the 1995 plan, but we've taken on here in the updated plan that we released.
The plan was originally developed in 1995 to provide a framework for restoring fish species such as salmon and lamprey, as well as sturgeon in upriver areas above Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River. In Oregon, I'm Will Robbins for National Native News.
The death of a young Lakota woman on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation continues to raise questions in her community more than a month after her passing. As Jim Kent reports, family and friends never expected to hear that she died as a result of a high-speed police pursuit.
Featherway Cologne was a star athlete and a musician during her high school years. She was also featured in the award-winning video More Than That, produced by Todd County High School students in response to A Hidden America, Children of the Plains, Diane Sawyer's critical observation of life on South Dakota reservations. So when word filtered out that Feather Ray had died after a high-speed pursuit by Rosebud Sioux Tribal Police in the early morning hours of May 1st, members of her small, close-knit community of Mission were shocked. Jackie Colombe is curious why the local media wasn't informed of the pursuit that killed her granddaughter, but she's more concerned about why the police were chasing Feather Ray, why she wasn't allowed to see Feather Ray before her body was sent to Sioux Falls for an autopsy, and why the need for an autopsy. Feather Ray's family is also being denied access to her cell phone as well as to her vehicle, which a Lakota spiritual leader needs to visit in order to complete a traditional burial ceremony. According to relatives, Feather Ray Colombe's reluctance to stop her vehicle may have been linked to her fear of police. Jackie Colombe says her granddaughter was involved in an incident during her elementary school years that resulted in a Rosebud Sioux Tribal police officer losing his job and doing prison time. Calls to the Rosebud Sioux Tribe's chief of police regarding the incident have not been returned. The FBI, which is investigating Feather Ray's death, has no comment. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Chickasaw Cultural Center in Oklahoma was recently nominated for recognition as a state tourism destination in the Oklahoma Newspaper's Reader's Choice Awards. The center opened in 2010 and shares Chickasaw culture and traditions with visitors. The Chickasaw Nation's Cultural Center has received other awards in recent years and made lists of top destinations in publications like CNN. The Cultural Center is located in Sulphur, Oklahoma. During this month in 1972, the Indian Education Act was signed into law. The legislation addressed needs of American Indian and Alaska Native students. It included additional funding and created the Office of Indian Education, which is now the Bureau of Indian Education, or BIE. For National Native News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
SAIL proudly presents the 30th annual Only Fools Run at Midnight, Saturday, June 21st, 11:59 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Get ready to take to the streets for Southeast Alaska's wildest 5K. Prizes galore for best centipedes, wackiest costumes, and top finishers. All proceeds help SAIL inspire personal independence for people with disabilities, seniors, and elders. Join SAIL on the solstice for Only Fools Run at Midnight. More details and registration at sailinc.org.
From Port Hardy one morning I cast off my line. The sea was all smooth and the weather just fine. Off for Castle Rock I was headed away, where the coho flashed silver all over the bay.
The subject is fish. We have been doing a series of programs here on Juneau Afternoon called Fish 101, and today we have the privilege of talking to Julianne Curry, who is with the United Fishermen of Alaska, and she does a tremendous job representing, I guess, a total of 36 other commercial Alaska fishing organizations from fisheries throughout Alaska. Julie, welcome to the show.
Julianne. How's it going?
Well, it's going quite well. It's raining here in Juneau.
If it makes you feel any better, it's raining down here at Petersburg, too.
And we're watching for an interesting thing where Suicide Basin out at Mendenhall Glacier is filling up again, and we may have another, I can't pronounce it ever correctly, but it's called a Hopjutal, I think, and that's when we have this overflow thing that we had a couple of years ago. So we're kind of watching out for that. It could be an interesting time again.
Well, keep us posted on the radio.
Well, I'm sure you will hear about it right here on the radio first. But right now, let's hear a little bit about United Fishermen of Alaska. Tell me the role the organization plays.
So United Fishermen of Alaska was incorporated in 1974, which actually makes 2014 our 40th anniversary. We're pretty excited about that. The organization's been around for a long time. And when it was incorporated, it was done so around the time that the Limited Entry Act was enacted, which was at the time primarily dealing with salmon fisheries throughout Alaska that were overcapitalized. So a bunch of forward-thinking fishermen and others got together and came up with the concept of trying to unite the salmon fishermen throughout the state of Alaska through United Fishermen of Alaska. And over the years, the organization, of course, has grown to not just deal with limited entry issues and salmon issues, but also with the creation of the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, working with the Division of Investments to develop loan programs. They've helped out with marketing programs. They helped with language for the Magnuson-Stevenson Act, which determined that U.S. waters were actually within the U.S., and they helped develop the 300-mile limit, which creates the boundaries for American fisheries. Around the 1980s, UFA started working on things like the Forest Resource Practices Act, which deals with protection of salmon resources. And around the 90s, we actually grew our membership to include other fisheries, such as crab and herring and halibut and black cod. And we also were some of the key defenses in the Fish Initiative in 1996, which would have reallocated fish by ballot box. In the early 2000s, we dealt with the salmon price crisis, and we have also helped develop a national seafood marketing plan. And then that brings us up to today, where we're still dealing with some of the same issues. One of the biggest issues we tackled last year was the ban on set nets, focus at Cook Inlet, which is also an initiative that would be dealt with at the ballot box, and that's an issue that we're still fighting today. So
Juliana,
a little bit of our history.
And a fascinating history it is. I guess I would have thought that was many other organizations, and of course you represent a whole bunch of organizations, but I didn't know that UFA had played that vital role in all of those things. You've been busy, haven't you?
The organization definitely has been, and there's really some amazing people involved in this organization. And, of course, UFA has never been the one to get everything done on the list, but they were definitely a help and definitely a driving force in many of them.
Now, Julianne, what is your role personally?
My role is as the executive director. So I've been here for about a year and a half in this role, and for about 7 years before that, I sat on the UFA board as one of the representatives for a member organization. And right now we're at about an all-time high of 36 UFA groups comprising of fisheries all across the entire state of Alaska, from pretty far up north to pretty far down south. And we also have four at-large members and around 475 individual and business members from across the state.
Julianne, how big is fishing in Alaska's economy?
Well, we are the number one private sector employer. So we provide quite a few jobs in Alaska, and the revenues that we bring into the state coffers are second only to the oil and gas industry.
And that those revenues amount to around $3 billion, I believe it is?
The numbers vary each year, of course, but the annual ex-vessel income, that's just income to Alaskan fishermen, is $1.69 billion.
Hmm. A major component of our economy. How much of that happens here down in Southeast Alaska?
Southeast Alaska is an extremely diverse region in the state of Alaska. Of course, all of our fisheries are diverse and all of our regions are diverse, but Southeast in particular, you've got just about every single fishery that you can imagine that occurs down here. So it's really a huge economic driver to the region and also to the local economies.
And in terms of Juneau, do we have a set of numbers that would kind of give us a sense of how big Juneau's contribution to that is?
Juneau's statistics are actually surprising. A lot of people who come and visit Juneau or spend a little bit of time there for the legislative session or even live there, the fishing industry just quietly operates in the background, but they're a huge economic force, and they're your friends and neighbors that are there buying groceries and fuel. You actually have 392 commercial fishing permit holders that live right there in the city and borough of Juneau, and you have 431 crew licenses that live there full time. So you've got about 703 people who are directly employed just by the fishing industry, so that does not include our seafood processing workforce.
And the seafood processing workforce, is a portion of that, I know there are a couple of small shops, is a portion of that here in Juneau as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You guys have some really incredible processors there. They're a little bit smaller than you'd see in some of the other areas, but they definitely pump some volume. So processing wages just for 2012 was over $2.4 million.
In Juneau?
Yeah, for the city and borough mm-hmm. of Juneau.
These numbers are really, as you said, quite surprising. I think that if you think of the economy here, it's largely government. About 45% of our jobs, I think, are government jobs. And then tourism is a big part of it, and also the medical profession. But fishing sure holds its own as a major leg of the four-legged stool of our economy down here.
Well, you guys landed 18 million pounds of seafood in 2012.
That's
so
right.
that seafood alone was worth $26 million.
Hmm. I'm just curious, is the hatchery considered a component of this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The hatchery numbers are included in some of the statistics that we have. I know you have our commercial fishing fact sheets that you found on our website, which is www.ufa-fish.org. And we have these commercial fishing fact sheets that are laid out by community throughout Alaska and then also the statewide statistics. But you guys have DIPAC there, which is a great hatchery. I've actually participated in a salmon fishery that is run right outside of the DIPAC hatchery. And I know there's probably a lot of people there in Juneau who have driven by there but have never stopped in, and I highly encourage you to do that. It's a great facility. They've got fish right there on site, so you can see how the hatchery works and operates, and we've got some great workers there.
There is a fabulous tour of the hatchery. There's a small charge, basically, just to cover the costs of staff and the ongoing process. But one of the nicest things in the Dipak hatchery is you really get a chance to see the sea creatures of our area around here, because they have a beautiful aquarium in there.
They really do. I was impressed the first time that I went in there, and it's kept me going back to the facility.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of tourists go there. I'm not sure how many local citizens from Juneau find their way into the hatchery, and it's well worth an afternoon tour. I guess as a closing thought here, what's the future for your organization? What do you think the issues are going to be that you're going to be addressing this year?
Well, I think one of the things that we pay really close attention to is the Alaska State Legislature, just like so many people in Juneau do. So we definitely have that in common. It's always extremely important to be educating legislators about the importance of our diverse economy, and for us, educating legislators about the importance of the fishing and the seafood industry to the state of Alaska. So that's something that we keep our thumb on. This is a huge election year for the state of Alaska, as most people know. Our governor is up, lieutenant governor, every single member of the state house, the majority of the Senate, and plus one of our U.S. senators and our sole congressman are up for reelection. So it's a big year. We encourage all of our members and others to make sure that they're getting out for the primary election in August and then the general election in November. So that's the primary focus that we have right now, but we're also keeping our eye on the SetNet ban initiative, which is currently traveling through the court process. So that's something that's very important to us. We don't feel that fisheries should be managed by ballot initiative. There's other avenues for that, such as the Board of Fisheries process. So those are two of the major things that we have coming up in front of us now. But one of the other things that we're trying to do is really just educate the general public about what the fishing industry is and what the fishing industry does, and make sure that when people are going to restaurants and when they're going to the store in Alaska, that they're asking for local seafood to be put on the menus and to be put on the shelves, because this is Alaska. This is what we do. Our fisheries resources are extremely important, and we want to make sure that you can get seafood in Alaska that's actually harvested by Alaskans in Alaska waters.
Julianne Curry, Executive Director of United Fishermen of Alaska. Give us that website just one more time so people can get information.
You've got it, Pat. It's www.ufa-fish.org.
Hey, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity.
Lawyers and bankers and more.
Is Bird Note. The Western Meadowlark and the American Dipper or Water Ouzel. Gordon Hempton, the sound tracker at QuietPlanet.com, has recorded them both.
There are so many tunes that I've heard after recording the Meadowlark, where its echo bounces off the sides of the valley, and it's just so beautiful. And then, you know, I push stop. My day's over. The sun is up. The wind has started to blow a little bit. The acoustics are breaking down. So, you know, now I'm free to stand up and just feel the joy. I can whistle back to the Meadowlark, and we can go into concert together.
John Muir, Hempton says, knew specific water ouzels by their songs.
He gives this description of the ouzel that goes on, and it's like painted like this mythical sonic creature, the darling of mountain streams. But he had his favorite individual ouzel that he knew over a period of years and would go to listen to his concert.
Listen again at birdnote.org.
just about 20 minutes after 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My next two guests are here to tell us about an exciting little event that's going to be the capstone of Pride Week here in Juneau. And this is the Music on the Fly concert out at the airport. So with me are Larae Jones and Leslie Wood. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And you're very brave to go out to the airport where people are getting their bags and wandering about the airplane and wondering why there are a bunch of people singing over in the corner. Are you prepared for people kind of stopping open-mouthed and wondering what's going on?
We hope people will stop open-mouthed and listen to us.
Yes.
We have a rousing polka that we're going to be singing, so hopefully people will be inspired to dance.
Well, there's room around the baggage terminal there. And you got to keep them from jumping up on the moving thing to continue the twirl, though.
Yes.
How big is the group that's going out?
Well, we have a smaller group for this show. We have 15 singers and a nice cross-section of the chorus. About three on each part, so that's just perfect.
How big is the total chorus at this point?
It's usually about 40, I think.
Mm-hmm.
35 to 40. Yeah.
Some people have been involved with the Pride Chorus for quite a while. How old is the organization? When did it start? Do you know?
We started in October of 1997.
Oh, okay.
And there are a few of us still that were founding members back then.
A few of us? Are you saying you were in there?
Yes.
You must have been a child when you were
just moved to town. So it's been 15 years.
And I haven't been that long. I've been for 2 years, and mostly because I just had a busy life going on, and every time I think about, I'd really like to start singing again, and if I ever have enough time to do that, that's the organization I'm going to go sing with. So finally worked around where I'm retired and had time to do it, and I probably hadn't sung in 30 years, but I'm thoroughly enjoying every minute.
There are both men and women in the chorus, right?
No,
it's all women.
Women.
It's all women. Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay, and do you have to be a member of the LGBTQ community in order to join?
No,
not at all.
Okay. No, we ask that people are supportive of the LGBTQ community and the issues that those of us in that community face, and so we strongly encourage our straight allies to join the chorus and be with us in our team sport of singing.
there's a delightful description.
Yes.
So who leads?
I'm the conductor.
Are you?
This is Leslie. Uh-huh. And I've been conducting since 2000. So this will be my 14th year doing that and thoroughly enjoying it every minute.
Do you make the selections?
Of the music?
Yeah.
We select music by a committee, and so I'm actively part of that committee. And, there are some director's prerogatives that I can choose to sing, have us sing, but mostly it's by committee, and then the committee brings a few selections to the chorus to have them choose as a whole chorus our final selections. And we're in that process right now for our next season, which will be starting up in late August or early September. And so we're busy choosing music for next year.
Mm. So can people request? Is there an avenue that non-members of the chorus could say, geez, we'd love to hear you guys sing?
That would be great.
Yeah.
Just let one of us from the committee know, and we'll see if we can find a choral arrangement that we can sing.
Is it difficult to find choral arrangements for a large all-women's chorus? What is there a lot of music that's prearranged, or do you have to work it over in order to make it fit the chorus?
Well, we search different websites. There's a lot of women's music arranged for women's choruses, and it's just a matter of if it's not too hard, not too easy kind of arrangement that we would like to do. So we do search around a lot.
Most everything is four parts, so makes it challenging, but fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes you can't find just women's music, so it's an SATB arrangement, which means tenor
soprano,
bass,
alto, tenor
and that
bass,
can go way too low for the women in the chorus, and so we have to be very careful on which SATBs we sing, but mostly it's arranged for women or have a baritone part so that's not too low for the women that can sing low in our chorus.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you work them over? I mean, does, not the women, the music. I mean, do you sing it the way it is on the page when you get it, or do you have to adapt it? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, well, we generally stick to the page. There's been a few times where we'd have to switch an octave if it gets too low, mm-hmm. so we call that octave hopping. But yeah, we have to do some of that sometimes, but it generally works out. It's easier if it's written on the page, so we can just be straightforward about it.
Yeah.
And we would love to have an arranger in the chorus that could arrange the music that we want to sing mm-hmm. in the way we want to sing it, but we don't have somebody like that. And in my next life, I'll learn how to do that, I'm sure. But that's something that a lot of choruses do have. They arrange their own music and then mix it in their range and with the, you know, accompaniment that they want. So maybe someday. Mm-hmm.
Leslie, now that you've given up your busy life and are a full-time member of the Pride Chorus, what do you sing? Are you?
I'm a second alto, so okay. It's fairly low. But there are things that go too low for me. Uh-huh. I don't. There's a couple of women that have deeper voices than I do, and it's really. I just can't say enough about the camaraderie of the whole group and supportiveness, and it's fun. So
how often do you practice?
Once a week, uh-huh. we practice Tuesday evenings about starting at 5:30 at the Resurrection Lutheran Church, uh-huh. and it goes all winter long.
So if someone were interested in joining the Pride Chorus, they could just come to the Resurrection Church, or do you have to audition in?
Nope, just show up and give us a try out and okay. see how it goes. That's kind of how we do it. We don't do auditions.
Okay. And so we're not practicing during the summer, so it will be later, early fall.
Yeah, this will be our end of the season concert on Sunday, and then we'll be taking a couple months off while we finish choosing the music for next year and get back together.
So the Juno Pride Chorus is going to be doing a concert at the airport. This is at 6:45 to 7:45 tonight?
No, Sunday.
Sunday afternoon, sorry, Sunday evening. And I want to emphasize that this is not limited to just the passengers who are coming and going. There's enough room in there that you can come in and listen to the concert. So if you're yeah. in the Valley and you want to come out and hear the Pride Chorus, they will be singing from 6:45 to 7:45 Sunday evening in the airport. And so just walk in. It's not in the TSA area. You don't have to go through security to hear the concert. And I invite everyone to drop by and hear some of this great music.
Well,
thank you so
fun.
Much. Let's hear the chorus as a way of finishing up.
Cold and it feels like the end. There's no place to
That's our own Pride Chorus. They're going to be singing at the airport 6:45 to 7:45 Sunday night. Go out and take a listen to them. You don't have to be booked on an airplane or anything like that in order to hear this concert. You just show up at the airport and take a listen to it. You also don't absolutely have to be a current resident of Star Hill in order to take advantage of this next little thing that we're talking about here with Claire Richardson. But you have to have either been lived there or live there now. Is that right?
Well, yes. And I was excited to be a part of a history project that we began over a year ago. And part of it was some of our older neighbors, like Reba Yose and the Crondells, were moving off the hill. And then we were having older residents who were passing away. And their stories were so fascinating. And I kept thinking, gosh, all this history is moving away. We need to somehow capture it or talk about it. And all these new people are coming in. So we had a centennial celebration a year ago. And Ron Klein took a photo, and thanks to the Juneau Douglas City Museum's history grant, he was able to photograph 112 former and current residents. We had so much fun last year that we decided to revive what used to be our solstice potluck and this celebration. And so tomorrow, Saturday, from 6 to 10 p.m., we're having another block party on Kennedy Street, which was 100 years old last year, and we're inviting, well, to be quite honest with you, some people did not know about it last year, and they were a little upset.
Mm.
And so I was like, oops. And so the Dapsifiches are coming this year, the Cadientes. We're trying to get as many former residents as possible. So we do have a block permit, and we will be blocking that street off. And folks can come and bring something to eat, something to share. We do have, thanks to JEDC, we'll be renting a few of those awning tents in case
good.
It rains. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure it won't. I'm
oh,
sure
no,
it's going to
no,
be sunny.
The forecast, however.
Yes. And so, anyway, we're hoping that people can come. And the idea is, last year we had name tags. We'll do that again this year. You put your name and the street where you lived, the address. And it's a chance for people to reminisce, to see old friends, but also to meet new neighbors and for folks to find out more about their homes or the stories of Star Hill in a very fun, social way without it being a history lesson.
Hey, Claire, just in case there is one listener out there that couldn't find Star Hill on a map, can you define its boundaries roughly?
Why, yes. It's at the bottom of Mount Roberts, uh-huh. where the old gold miners used to hike over to go to work every morning. If you go up Main Street, you turn right on 6th. You just head towards Mount Roberts, and when you start heading up the hill, you know you've arrived. When you see Chicken Yard Park, mm-hmm. where the nuns used to feed the chickens, then you know that you're home.
But now you're up on Star Hill. Okay, good enough. All right, so hours again for this event?
Well, it's from 6 to 10 p.m., mm-hmm. and actually, I'm in a little bit of a bind because the museum's expecting me to identify all 112 people in the portrait. And I am shocked, but I actually don't know everyone in that photo. So I'm hoping the 112 people that were there last year will show up this year because they need to write in their names and their occupations. What's interesting about the history is we've had so many fascinating people live there, not just the interesting history of the homes, but the kinds of people that have lived there, teachers and pilots and artists and writers and scientists and accountants and stay-at-home moms and business people. All these interesting people have lived there, and their stories are quite fascinating. But I should say one thing about it. We also encourage, we'll have on display, and I brought here to the radio station today, two items that were found in our house when we were renovating, and they're balsa wood mining tools. And I know we're going to talk about Gold Rush Days coming up this weekend. And we found these when we were renovating in 1998. And other people have found different things. Just last year, the people across the street were renovating Marguerite Fiorella's house, and they found a 100-year-old composition notebooks, English notebooks, math notebooks. It's so exciting. And what's horrifying is when someone says, oh, yeah, I found a bunch of stuff and I threw it away. And people are like, oh, my goodness. So we're encouraging people, if you have interesting items from your days on Star Hill, bring it and share it. Show it to us. We have a great Facebook page. It's called Kennedy Street Centennial, started it a year ago, and it's interesting how folks from around the country have said, oh, yeah, I'm from Star Hill. And one thing to note, we have, of course, many amazing artists that have lived on Star Hill, and Sue Kraft, who many people know, has just moved away to Seattle. So very sad for the neighborhood. But before she left, she popped by my house, and she donated quite a few copies of her beautiful print called Winter Afternoon, Juneau, Alaska, and it's from her vantage point of her home on Star Hill. And she said, Claire, why don't you go ahead and just collect donations for these to help defray the cost of putting on these potlucks and any other projects you guys want to do in the neighborhood. So folks who would like to pick up one of those tomorrow, I encourage you to come with a checkbook or some cash. It's all going to be very reasonable. We just want to pay for the costs. And last year, we made enough money to not only pay for the whole event, but we were able to buy a currant bush, and a few months later had a planting in Chicken Yard in honor of Marguerite Fiorella and Mary Thomas, mother, Rita Thomas, who they both had died within the last few years. And so we thought, wow, isn't this great? We get to celebrate what the street, you know, the neighborhood is now. We get to remember the people from the past, and we get to pass on to the children where they're from and what this history is all about.
A wonderful, wonderful operation. So 6 to 10 p.m. Saturday, Star Hill former residents, Star Hill residents, the potluck is on. Bring objects, if you have them, that are reminiscent of Star Hill, and come out and meet your neighbors and your former neighbors.
And dress warmly. Bring a chair and something to share. And, yes, there will be restrooms available. Parking is limited, so we encourage carpooling. But there will be a drop-off zone,
yes.
So you can pull on to Kennedy Street and drop off your food, your chair, and your elderly relative. It'll all be fabulous.
Thank you, Claire. This is KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of June, 2014. It was on this day, 1977, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline began to pump oil. For the first time, the largest private construction project ever completed in United States history, 800 miles long, a pipeline 48 inches in diameter, going over three mountain ranges, crossing 34 major rivers, including the Yukon, pumping almost 2 million barrels of crude oil every day, traveling through the pipe at about 7 miles an hour to the port of Valdez. It's the birthday of the biochemist Frederick Gowland Hopkins, born in Sussex, England, 1861, got his degree in chemistry, and in 1901, Hopkins discovered the amino acid tryptophan. He studied diet and its effect on the body's metabolism and concluded that essential amino acids, which the body needs to produce its own proteins, was not made by the body but must be consumed as part of the diet, that there are elements in food that animals need to survive, which he called necessary nutrient factors, but we know them today as vitamins. It's the birthday of the poet Paul Muldoon, born in Portadown in County Armagh in Northern Ireland, 1951. His father, a laborer, farmer, who Muldoon recounts could just about write his own name. The boy went off to Queen's University, Belfast, got a job with the BBC as a radio producer, published his first book when he was 21 years old. Paul Muldoon, who's written children's books and libretti, has a big collection of electric guitars and writes rock lyrics, which were just collected in his most recent book, The Word on the Street, which comes with a CD that includes some of the songs performed by Muldoon's band, Wayside Shrines. It's the birthday of Vikram Seth, born in Calcutta, 1952, author of A Suitable Boy, the longest single-volume work of fiction in English since 1747. And it's the birthday of the guitarist Chet Atkins, born in Luttrell, Tennessee, 1924, who said, "Back then nobody had any money. We were so poor, and everybody around us was so poor, that it was the 40s before any of us knew there had been a depression." Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran entitled Spelling Bee. In the spelling bee, my daughter wore a good brown dress and kept her hands folded. There were 12 children speaking into a microphone that was taller than they were. Each time it was her turn, I could barely look. It wasn't that I wanted her to win, but I hoped she would be happy with herself. The words were too hard for me. I would have missed chemical, thermos, and dessert. Each time she spelled one correctly, my heart became a bird. She once fluttered so restlessly beneath my skin, and on the morning of her arrival, her little red hands held nothing. Her life since has been a surprise. She can sew, she can draw, she can read. She hates raisins but loves science. All the parents must feel this, watching from the cheap folding chairs. Somewhere inside them, love took shape, and now it stands at the microphone, spelling. Faith Sheeran's poem, Spelling Bee, from her collection, Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I'm Carolyn Brown, and I support KTOO. I became a member because it was important to support what I believed in. It's immense in terms of the things that I enjoy. I talk to lots of different people from many diverse ethnic backgrounds, work, life, career. Most of the people I know listen to KTOO. It is a foundation in this community.
Renew or start your membership at ktoo.org.
You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's about 18 minutes before 4 o'clock. My next guest is one of the organizing folks behind Juneau Gold Rush Days, which is coming up this Saturday and Sunday. Hi. Jerry Harmon is with me. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
So you have a real complex schedule of events and competitions that goes on all day Saturday and all day Sunday.
We do.
Plus a kids' carnival and a bunch of other things down there, including a bunch of food vendors in a big tent.
That's pretty much where it's at. The loggers and the miners get out and compete against each other. So mining events are on Saturday. Logging events are on Sunday. And both miners and loggers compete against each other in the events, mining and logging.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of some of the mining events that you have scheduled?
The mining events, the big event for mining is the jackleg drilling competition. We use a jackleg drill, and we drill into a concrete block, the same as we'd do if we were mining underground drilling. And I have to drill two holes side by side in a 6-inch square, if you will, and they can't wander out of that, and it's the shortest time that wins that contest.
Jackleg drill is a fairly hefty object drilling with.
It is. It weighs 120 pounds, as they'll see it there during the competition. It's air operated, has water to cool the motors, and the has a leg that air operated that helps lift the jackleg and shoves it into the face of the rock, and it turns to the left.
Hmm. And then you got a spike driving contest?
Spike driving contest will pretty much follow that. That's where miners drive 8-inch spike, two of them down, and 3 6-inch spikes up over their head. with a miner's axe.
And that's broken into. There's women's and men's competitions for the spike.
The women compete in that as well. They drive three spikes that are 6-inch spikes down, not over their head.
And then you have mucking. What is mucking?
There's overshot mucking, which is the machine that we use is a 1936, came from the old AJ mine. It picks up the muck, shoves it over its back into an ore cart, and you back that off and drop it down the drift to the mill. And out here, we just dump it in a loader bucket and put it back for the next competitor.
So if you just come out to observe, by the end of this thing, you're going to know a tremendous amount about how gold was produced in Juneau back in the 1890s and 1900s.
Those machines pretty much eliminated the pick and shovel operation where they were running rail, and they are still used today around the country, so you'll get to see that. All the other events, the jackleg drilling and the spike driving are things that miners do in the mines today.
And you also have a logging section. That's all day Sunday.
All day Sunday is logging. Typical logging events, we have a spar tree that we climb that's 90 feet in the air. That's a speed climbing event, both men and women. We have a log rolling contest where you get on a log and roll around in the pond and generally get wet. But we have some women that do really well there. So we hope that we have a lot of competition this year.
You wear spiked shoes, too.
Some do. Some
do.
They're just sandals, some don't.
Okay.
If you're really good at it, I'm not sure the spikes really have a big advantage for you.
So what's our was there active logging in the Juneau area, or was it mostly just in support of the mining operation?
For years and years and years and years there was. It just pretty much came to an end here as we knew it as a logging company, where they had to float barges that pull the logs around. Not much cutting anymore in southeast Alaska.
And the focus of it was really not so much here as it was around Ketchikan. Is that correct?
No, we've mined here. We logged in this country.
Oh, we did. Okay.
Most of these hills around here, you see the trees were cut from. If you look at historic photographs from 100 years ago, a lot of this was clear cut. But if you look at it now, you can barely see where they were. Loggers were at.
Yeah, being a temperate rainforest helps that along.
That does. That helps a bunch.
Now, there's also children's events going on throughout the weekend, including a couple of competitive events.
We have on Saturday, we have a hand mucking contest for the kids. They come out and hand muck into a small ore cart that we have. Mm-hmm. That's a speed competition. And on Sunday, they do a choker setter race where they take a choker, they go out and wrap it around a log. They have to hook it into the bell correctly, and then they race back to the starting line, and that's a timed event.
Now, have the kids that are going to compete in this, do they train year-round, or do you teach them how to do this while they're out there?
We pretty much show
I guess my
them.
Question is, can a kid come off the street and be involved in these things?
They can.
Yeah, okay. And how about in the adult competitions as well? Are there people who get fired up in the crowd and say, I could do that?
They do, but they don't do anything for a week afterwards. You pretty much need to practice that one.
Okay. So the competitors in these events are actually people who do spend some time working up their skills for these things. So I think I heard there are a couple of guys who are fighting it out for top billing here in the mining contest. Is that?
We have a hand that works at Greens Creek who has taken a lot of those events, different events, not necessarily the all around. And there's a couple from out at Kensington Mine. We have Smitty, who's come down. He works with the mine training group, and he's here. They've got good competition this year.
Yeah. So it sounds like a really exciting day. And there's food. You got a big food booth set up out there with lots of vendors coming out.
Lots of food. The Spinning Pig's going to be there. Garfield is there with his fried bread. We have the donut people. They're there.
Starts 9 o'clock on Saturday. Starts 9 o'clock on Sunday too.
It does.
Okay, and closes up about 5 p.m. both days. The Children's Carnival only runs from 1 to 3.
That's 1 to 3. The gold painting is from 1 to 3 as well.
Okay, okay. So this is Juno Gold Rush Days. It's this Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow and Sunday, and admission charge, right? What's it cost to get in?
It's a free event. It's a family event.
Ah, okay.
We've planned it that way, and for 24 years now, that's what we've been doing.
Okay, this is in Savico Park over in Douglas, right off of Sandy Beach. So come on out, watch people compete, maybe get a little bit involved yourself. But as you were warned, you may not do anything for a few days afterward if you decide you're going to roll a log.
They'll be less tired if they just watch.
If they just watch. Okay, good enough. Well, good advice for all of us probably. Thank you very much for coming on and for telling us about everything that's going on.
Thank you very much for letting me be here.
The clinic is closed and you or a loved one don't feel well, or you have a health-related question that can't wait. What do you do? Here's the solution. Starting July 1st, Search will have a free after-hours nurse triage line for our patients in Juneau. Search's free after-hours service is available by calling 1-800-613-0560. For life-threatening emergencies, please call 911.
This message brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
But always I'll realize that it all was just a dream. Something died inside my heart that day. Day I learned that nothing is ever as it seems. All these wars and lies and truth were all pushed off to the side. With eyes that always saw too much and yearned to understand, finally I decided to just write a song instead. Finally I decided to just write a song instead.
She's Juliana Bibbs. She's becoming a regular here.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is the, let's see, you were music on the fly.
Yes, I was.
Last time. You did it, what, three Sundays ago?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, how'd it go?
I went interestingly
did
well.
You, did you stop them in their tracks, a few of them?
Well, what happened really was I was at the bottom of the stair, the escalators come down to the baggage claim.
Yeah.
You know, there was that set up of benches. I just sat down there.
Right.
And there's actually a group of elderly folk who were very, very nice. They all sat down on the benches with me, and I had a constant audience the whole night, which was very nice because one thing I like to do with my songs is kind of talk about the songs in between, since all the songs do have a normally rather complicated story behind them. Like, yeah, even the two songs I have today. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that was actually pretty nice. And, you know, I had a bit of a dialogue going on with them. And since originally I'd planned to just have background music, I did repeat some of the songs, but they're all right with that. And
cool.
I also played a lot more covers than I usually do.
Uh-huh.
You know, some songs from one of my idols, John Foreman. Well, I may have mentioned before, who knows, but...
Now, before we get away here, I need to be sure that everybody understands you're playing today.
Yes, I'm playing today.
Yeah, so as soon as she leaves here, she runs across the street to the Jack and sets up on the stage and is one of the performers for Food Truck Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Jack event where basically you go out and you get some food out from the food trucks in the parking lot, and then you bring it inside, and Juliana sits there and entertains you while you consume your food.
Yes, but this week it's going to be a little bit different because, as I was told, there's construction going on in the main hall, so I'm not going to be performing in the main hall. I'm going to be performing in the gallery.
Oh, okay.
So you'll be able to walk through, look at some beautiful art, and listen to my music.
Uh-huh.
And as I understand it, they'll also be broadcasting what I'm playing.
Yeah,
out.
I think so. They have it on speakers outdoors, yeah. So you'll be, people walking down the street will hear you as well. Okay, so that much. Now I want to go back to the airport. Because my curiosity is, so that people come down the escalator. They've just gotten off of an airplane, and they come down the escalator, and here you are, sitting there with your guitar and like that.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of facial expressions do you get? What message do you receive from these folks?
I didn't get much, because... Yeah, traveling, you're normally pretty exhausted, but there's some people who glanced my way and seemed kind of grateful for the music, but...
Anybody stop and listen for a while?
A couple people, if I remember, most of them were pretty busy, had places to go.
Now, when I asked you about what you were going to do out there last time, I asked you if you were going to have a case open that people could throw a few bucks into, so did you make any money?
I did. I didn't get any passing tips, but my audience... You know,
your standing audience, so the folks who sat around with you on the benches, paid up a little bit. Good for them. Good for them. Well, Juliana, so you're now rich and famous. You'll have to decide where you're taking me for dinner after the show. I'm going to do a slightly rude thing. I would love to have you do your second song. I have to get out of the program, so I'm going to let you sing for a bit, but then I'm going to ask you to kind of be background for me while I finish up the things that I have to say at the end of the show. Is that okay with you?
Yes, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This song is perfect for that, actually.
So it is all yours. Here we go.
All right. The second song is called Home, which it actually is the theme of traveling, which is why I was glad to play it at the airport last time. So this... All right. Waiting on the line to go somewhere far away. I said I would get out of this town. Everybody's smiling, but I feel no passion's wind. Watching the childhood fade away. It's a song that I heard to love. Far too young when my eyes fell open.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO at 101.7. In Gustavus, they hear us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. And you can hear us on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN is on 872, and KXLL is on 873.